Welcome to the Property Management Mastermind Show with your host, Brad Larson. Brad owns one of the fastest growing property management companies in San Antonio, Texas. This podcast is for property managers by property managers. You'll hear from industry leading professionals on best practices, new ideas, success stories, and lessons learned. This is your opportunity to learn about the latest industry buzz surrounding property management, as well as tips and strategies to improve your business. Now here's your host, Brad Larson.
Hey everyone, this is Brad Larson, founder of the Property Management Mastermind. Thanks to our sponsors, we've been able to compile a tremendous list of offers and discounts, with this list expanding every episode. To see that complete offering, visit our website at propertymanagementmastermind.com. I also wanted to announce the Pulling Back the Curtain Conference going on in August this year in Denver, Colorado. For more information on that, visit our site for the link. Lastly, be sure to check out our Facebook group page and become a member.
This show is sponsored by the best home inspection software on the market for property managers. We endorse and use Z-Inspector as our software of choice for our team to document home inspections. We particularly like their 360 degrees camera system that produces amazing views of the interior room. Your clients will love Z-Inspector documented inspections you provide them. Visit www.zinspector.com to learn more.
Tenants not changing their air filters? Costly HVAC repairs and unhappy owners got you down? Filter Easy is a subscription air filter delivery service that solves this problem by shipping filters directly to the tenant's front door when it's time to change. Tenants actually change them, which reduces HVAC-related maintenance calls by an average of 30%. Filter Easy's no-cost-you solution functions as a profit center to give you back time and money. Call 1-800-308-1186 today to learn more.
Hey everybody, in today's episode, I have Ms. Lisa Four coming at us from San Diego, and we're going to be talking about short-term rentals and the management side of that to tie into the game of long-term rental management. And Lisa's an expert in this space. She's been managing well over 120 single-family homes, short-term rental single-family homes for a number of years, and I would definitely consider her an expert in this particular issue. So this will be a good episode, so listen up. And welcome everybody to another edition of the Property Management Mastermind. I'm your host, Brad Larson. And today's guest, I have Ms. Lisa Four coming at us from California. And we're going to be talking about short-term rentals. And she is in one of the most ideal markets for this in the San Diego region. But she's been doing this for a long time, has experience as a second generation, possibly even a third generation person who's been doing property management. And I begged her to come on the show. And she... She was nice enough to listen to me and say, okay, I'll come on. And so I really appreciate you coming on. So Lisa, how are you today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Excellent. Appreciate you coming on. So to give us kind of a scale and who you are, what you are, give us kind of a background of the company you're in, kind of what you manage, the size, the employees, just kind of give us some background of who you are.
Okay, perfect. So we are based in San Diego, California. The company was actually originally started by my grandmother. My mom worked here as well, though she hasn't been involved in the company in quite some time. I started here back in 1996 and had the pleasure of working with my grandma for quite a number of years until she passed away in 2006 and I took over the company. We do real estate sales and we do property management as well, both unfurnished and furnished. So we manage about 350 properties and then about 120 vacation rentals. So we have our hands full. Have about 9 employees and a couple of virtual assistants as well.
That's excellent. That's why I really wanted to have you on, is the valuable experience you have with short-term rentals. And so I think it's kind of a unique topic right now, as more people are seeing the short-term rental system as a way to add to their long-term rental system. Now, it is two different animals, as you're going to attest right in some of the stories that you'll talk about. But people are looking at this like, hey, I'm in management. I'm doing short-term rentals. I can do long-term rentals and vice versa. And so it's really kind of an informational episode that we want to talk about the differences. And then potentially, if you're interested in getting into it, there's things you want to start doing and ways to go about this. So I want you to talk a little bit about the short-term rental management side, as far as how you guys do this, how many you manage, you know, staff members dedicated to it. Kind of go into that and let's go from there.
Sure. So we have 2 virtual assistants and 2 full-time property managers, gentleman who kind of is our go-to. He goes and does our inspections. If a coffee maker needs to be delivered, any of that stuff. He is, I don't want to call him our gopher, but he's just our kind of our runner. And then we have a in-house maintenance person. So we manage, like I said, about 120 properties. So anywhere on a Saturday in the summertime in our peak season, we have 5 hours. We turn over anywhere between 30 to 50 properties in that 5 hours. So it's really imperative that you have your systems in place. I know a lot of, you know, NARPM, a lot of the sessions that you see these days are talking about systems. And so having those systems in place in the vacation rental industry is of the utmost importance, and reliable vendors. If you don't have those, you're not going to make it.
Yeah, one of the things that you and I talked about pre-show was we're talking about the difference in mindset, because as we know with long-term rentals, it's kind of like, don't bug us, leave us alone, don't leave reviews. You know, we want the least amount of pain possible. Right. It's not an ass-kissing thing. I mean, that's, I don't know how else to put it, but as a short-term rental person, you are a host. I mean, this is your best friends coming to stay at this property for 3, 4, 5 days. And if something goes awry, you have to be Johnny on the spot and get out there. So talk to me about kind of the difference in mindset that you have to really put yourself into to manage short-term rentals.
Well, you're competing with the hotel industry. So, I mean, if you think about it that way, when you go to a hotel, I mean, the level of customer service you have, I mean, if you were to call up and say, hey, I've got a leaky faucet or something going on, and they told you, you know, we expect that to be put in writing, you probably won't get a person to come back to your rental. And with these online platforms, VRBO, HomeAway, Airbnb, they've really changed the statistics on how your property's placed. It is really driven by not just the photos and the pictures and you know, your availability and the size of the property, but it's really driven by your reviews. Just as you are as a company online driven by your reviews, you're actually, your placement on these portals is driven by your reviews. So the better reviews you have, the higher placement you're going to get. And when you're in a very competitive market, I mean, locally, we have about 3,000 rentals, you know, competing for that space. It's really important to have good reviews, have a property that is clean, not full of clutter. You really want it to feel like you're walking in almost like a hotel room. You want it to feel homey, but you don't want all those tchotchkes kind of everywhere where people feel it's a little cluttered.
Makes sense. And so some of the things that I want to bring up was on that particular issue, the reviews, that's a big thing, because if you're getting a 3, 4, you know, 2-star review on that property, you are really, I mean, that's putting the owner at peril at that point. Versus a management company on a long-term rental. Okay, if we get a 1-star review, it's not the end of the world. Most owners won't even feel that. But a 1-star review or 2-star review on a short-term rental, I wouldn't say it's a killer, but it's certainly not something that is good.
Right. No, it's not good at all. But just like your online reviews with your own company, it's really about how you respond to them. People can really see through the minutiae of somebody who's just a complainer, versus the people that have valid complaints about the property. And obviously sometimes those reviews come down to something that you couldn't even control on the property. I mean, I can't tell you how many times we have beach property. A lot of them have, some pumps in them. So, you get somebody who goes in there the week before, they got a child, and then they shove, it still baffles me. People put diapers and things sort down the toilets, just common sense. But, you know, stuff like that, that they put down the toilets and it clogs it, and you're dealing with sump pumps, which is a whole nother beast, than dealing with just your, you know, your average sewer line. And I can't tell you how many times we're sitting in the peak week in summertime, and then we have a sewage backup that we have to deal with. So, your ability to manage a crisis like that in a time where you are in a peak week, in a peak season, in an area that is sold out from hotels to vacation rentals, you can't quickly just relocate somebody. You've got to be good in problem solving and your problem solving ability, and to mitigate angry people.
Makes a lot of sense. So one thing I wanted to bring up was, let's back up a bit. So you are managing short-term rentals currently. What if somebody wants to start from scratch? So let's take you, for example. Somebody comes to you and says, hey, I want to buy a home and by the beach. It's a vacant property. I'm going to buy it. I'm going to turn it into a short-term rental. Tell me what to do. Go.
So if you're a property owner coming to me, I mean, first and foremost, not only assessing the property and how well it will do in the vacation rental market. Again, like I said, it's become a very competitive industry, but it's also the mindset of the owner and if they are a viable candidate for it. Because if you have a property that is not a prime beachfront property, you really have to fight for those rentals in the offside or whatever. I mean, it may not be beachfront, but you know, whatever draws people to your neighborhood, whether you have a lake, you know, things of that sort, you've got to have amenities. You've got to have something that draws them to it. And if you don't have that, or say, you know, a lot of the condominium complexes, they have a 30-day minimum and these people still want to do, you know, quote unquote vacation rentals. They want to rent it furnished. You know, you're not going to generate that income on the weekly level that is going to make it worthwhile for you to do vacation rental. So it's really a matter of, on a financial level, what the owner's expectations are and meeting those up front and making them understand whether or not, you know, they're going to cover their expenses or if they're just really trying to offset, you know, some of the expenses in carrying the property because they want to, you know, rent it themselves or they want to use it themselves throughout the year. So it's really important to understand where your client's coming from, what their expectations are financially, if they're, you know, really trying to maximize the potential of the property or they're trying to offset costs. And so you can really assess whether or not they're going to be, you know, if this is an avenue that they should be going down.
So a stiff drink of honesty doesn't hurt. I mean, you got to
give it to them honestly. I'm brutal.
Like, yeah, hey, man, or hey, lady, this is not going to work. You got, you know, this is not a good short-term rental. So let's make the assumption that it is. You guys have like a way to furnish a property. Is it to the effect of, okay, you have a viable short-term rental here. It is vacant now because you just bought it or whatever. You just vacated it. Now I need 15 grand or 20 grand to furnish it. Talk me through how you even would recommend somebody how to furnish a property for a short-term rental.
So most people actually come to us with furnished property already, but for those people that do buy property, we do have a go-to list of, you know, the things that are necessities. I mean, absolutely, you can't do it without, you know, these items in the property. Then we have a suggested list of items. We do have, you know, people locally that are interior decorators and stuff and that can help that, but we don't personally take that on. We can assist them in it and, you know, give them advice if they want to do it themselves, but that's not something, a service that we actually provide.
So that's key. So that's a big thing because I was thinking, okay, you're going to take a check from the owner for 20 grand, then you're going to go furnish the property. So you're saying to the owner, we're going to refer you to an interior decorator and you guys are going to work it out. Once it's furnished and ready to go, we're going to advise you on the knickknacks because I've heard that term. It's all about the knickknacks at these properties, right? You know, having the salt and pepper and the forks and the knives and the all the stuff. I mean, talk me through that. I mean, just give me a couple minutes on the knickknacks.
Sure. Well, we have it broken down in our list. We actually have it broken down by room and exactly what needs to be in there. So obviously in the kitchen, you know, when you're furnishing a property from scratch, you do it. It's hard to remember everything that you have at home. So from the potato peeler to, you know, the blender, obviously, you know, on the beach, you know, they're wanting to make margaritas and things of that sort. So it's just remembering all those nuances. So yeah, from the kitchen, you know, everything from your utensils to your plates and obviously having, you know, not just your nice dishware, but some of the stuff that's, you know, plasticware that can be outside on the deck. Things that, you know, you want something that's nice, but also that it's not personal to you. So if something breaks, you're not heartbroken over it. So it's really important to understand, you know, there's some people that come here with vacation rentals and it's, you know, their family home and they've got things in that are just, you know, very personal to them. And if something happened to it, they'd be devastated. And that's the first thing we ask, you know, is there anything in here that, you know, if something broke, you'd be devastated. I'm like, yank it out, get out of here. It's really important to get rid of that stuff. So you have to think of it like a business, you know, bedrooms, you know, king size beds, you know, are really important over queen if you can fit them because, you know, there's some big guys out there and not, you know, everybody at their, you know, typically doesn't want to sleep in a queen bed if they don't have to. So TVs in the bedrooms, things like that. It's, you know, all about the accommodation.
So agree on the bed thing. We just did a VRBO in Colorado and in the main bedroom, they had this queen little bed. I mean, I'm a big guy, 6'3", 240. I mean, come on, it was not fun. Let's just say I felt like I was, you know, Will Ferrell in the movie where he's a, you know, in the Christmas guy, whatever. Anyway, here's the litmus test for you. So if somebody calls you up and says, I'm missing a potato peeler, is somebody going to run a potato peeler over there?
Unfortunately. Yeah, we actually have a storage facility on site at our office that houses, you know, from linens to pillows, blenders, potato peelers, everything minus major appliances. It just saves us at the end of the day of having to, you know, run down the store to, you know, do that, you know, take an entire hour for something that's so minute. So we, yeah, potato peelers, you'd be surprised the calls that we get for sure. So things that aren't really expected to be at properties.
That's a great way to illustrate the difference in service right there, is that you have basically a special forces team is going to parachute in and deliver a potato peeler within minutes of the call versus a long-term rental management company be like, you know, give them the middle finger and say, nope, we're not doing that for you, pal. Go get your own potato peeler. So that was a great point just to delineate the difference in the service level that, you know, we're not used to providing as long-term rental property management companies. But it can be done with a difference in mindset. So this parlays into the next question is, how do you get this to a corporate level? I mean, it's easy if you do it. If Lisa is the one pressing the button, if Lisa's making the decisions on running a potato peeler down there at all, but how do you potentially put that into a team member's lap and expect them to do that? Talk me through some of the challenges there.
Well, I'm a firm believer in any business and any position and an employee. You can give them the tools and the training to do the job, but you can't teach attitude. So it's really about hiring right off the bat, and having somebody that has that go-getter attitude and that they want to please. Because at the end of the day, this isn't, you're not just managing a property, you're creating an experience for somebody. So you have to really put it into perspective of, you know, when you're going on vacation, you know, what are your expectations? If you were staying there, what would you want and how would you want to be treated? And that's really important to, you know, establish in your place.
Okay, good stuff. So let's go to this point. Let's talk about some of the semantics of all this, the down and dirty details of management agreements and other documents that you're using. So let's talk about engaging with that new owner who has a viable property. They have it furnished. They're ready to go. Are you doing a management agreement just like what a long-term rental company would do? Talk me through some of the engagement you get with the owners to start from scratch.
Sure. So yes, we do have a management agreement in there, and some of those clauses in your management agreements that, you know, a typical unfurnished property management company would have, you know, the indemnity clause, things like that are far more important to have in these contracts. You know, we personally experienced an $18 million lawsuit that it took a couple years for us to, we didn't, you know, completely get out of, but we were partially responsible for. We had an owner who decided on a, you know, $6 million beachfront duplex to, you know, lower their policy to $500,000 policy on it. And he had a child that fell out of a 2.5 story window on his head in concrete, monkeying around on a bunk bed that had all of its, you know, bars and safety bars, but it was, you know, kind of right by the window, and they had the window open. The children were up there unsupervised, and a 3-year-old was, you know, monkeying around on the side of it and pitched himself out the window. So it's really, it kind of brings about all the things that you don't really think of. So, you know, from that, we just did stickers to put on all the windows. You know, these windows are openable, but you open them at your own risk, you know, bunk bed notifications and warnings and everything of that sort in our contract. So we're constantly adding the things and things that you don't think of. Unfortunately, like everything in contracts, they all come about from, you know, experiences and lawsuits, but, you know, other than, you know, disclosing, you know, compensation and things of that sort that are a little bit different than the unfurnished side, there's not a whole lot different to the property management other than giving you the full release to be able to book, you know, without, you know, notifying them and things of that sort that, you know, we have full right and exclusivity to the booking.
Good stuff. So the licensing side, I want to talk through this. So In San Antonio, they just passed an ordinance to where all the short-term rentals have to be licensed. Like they have to license the home. Do you as the management company help them do that?
We do. So every city's different. I'm sure if anybody has followed this industry at all, they know that, you know, over the last year or so, we were just, you know, we've been battling in San Diego that they were trying to ban vacation rentals. So in the city limits, they were trying to ban it. Now that didn't affect us because we're in North County. So we're outside of the city limits. We're in the, but unfortunately it creates a domino effect. And we've seen cities that have actually just implemented good neighbor policies and certain licensing and everything, and it's worked out really, really well. Unfortunately, right now we are looking at a new governor who is really trying to tackle a housing crisis in our state that has been ongoing for some time. And it looks like now next week they are meeting, the Judiciary Committee's meeting to discuss a regulation on vacation rentals in our area. Because right now, what we've had is the Coastal Commission, which maybe not everybody has, like our state, that has jurisdiction over certain distance from the coast. And they've been for vacation rentals. They've supported it, which is why a lot of cities haven't banned it, because they understand that they would be up against the Coast Commission in fighting it. And I feel, I don't know if this is the state's way trying to overstep that, but they look like they're going to be banning it and allowing, they're at least going to be discussing regulating and banning vacation rentals for people who are off site, only a 30-day maximum. Unless you're on site, then you can rent 365 days a year. I don't know where this is going to go, but they're meeting on April 9th, and this is, you know, kind of just come out of nowhere.
Well, that's one of the things that's kind of unique to the short-term rental game is the regulations mm-hmm. and the codes are always changing. So the regulation could be a good thing for the industry if they were just, you know, put the set type of regulations in and just leave it alone. But when they start going over the top and trying to ban these, I think that's a bad thing. You know, that let the free market do its thing. But that's here nor there. Let's talk about the insurance stuff. So back to the property management agreement you're getting from those owners up front. What kind of insurance differences are you looking for, a short-term rental or a long-term rental? Is there anything that they have to talk to their insurance companies about?
Absolutely. There's a completely different policy in place. You do need to make sure that you speak to your insurance company and let them know that you're doing short-term vacation rentals. Your average owner policy doesn't cover interior contents because they don't think that you live there. So, you know, that alone, there's, you know, difference in having the interior contents covered. But the liability, most management companies have $1 million minimum liability, and even in our vacation rental contract, it has that. But we put in there in bold, we highly recommend more. I mean, if you can get another umbrella policy, at least on top of that, you know, at least $1 to $2 million on top of it, if not five, you know, it's recommended for sure.
Let's talk accounting. So how do you account for some of this stuff? Are you using a separate platform for this?
For accounting as the financial side or just in managing?
On the short-term rental side, because, you know, for example, a lot of us might use AppFolio for the long-term rentals, but do you use a separate platform for the short-term rentals?
Yeah, I know quite a few people. We use AppFolio in our long-term department, but I know a lot of people who are trying to use AppFolio for vacation rentals. And though they say that you can, you just don't have the functionality there. You can't do it. You cannot scale up a business on that. So we use B12, which is a HomeAway, now owned by Expedia, product backed by a company a long time ago, Property Plus, which is one of kind of the pioneering companies in technology in our industry. And the difference is you're able to actually link and sync to these online portals, VRBO, HomeAway, FlipKey, where your availability is real time. And so if somebody books on one portal, it automatically updates it all of them, at least within the hour. And so it's really important. If you're not, you have too many man hours. I mean, even in a virtual assistant, it's not worth it financially to try and do all that manually.
What was the name of that again?
V12, V's in Victor, and then the number 12.
Okay.
We also own another software called Escapia.
Okay. Cause we did a podcast episode with the gentleman from Kigo, and you know, they're in the short-term rental space. And so, you know, I'm still learning about this as a lot of folks are out there listening. So V12 is one, Kigo.net was one, and Escapia is kind of like an offshoot of that. Am I right?
Yeah. Escapia and V12 are pretty equal in their space. The same company owns First Resort Software. There's quite a few different platforms and we've used a few different ones. We've been on V12 since for like the last 5-6 years now. I'm familiar with Kigo as well, and they've been up and coming. They were really more widely used in the European market, and they've definitely made their way into our space. And I'm starting to see them putting on conferences and everything.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a whole separate industry for this, right? And us, the long-term rental management companies, we start to put our blinders on. We don't even look left and right. And all of a sudden you wake up and say, what is the short-term rental stuff? And you start, you know, looking around at all these different conferences, and they're worldwide stuff. I mean, this is not like, you know, a local conference up in God knows where. This is like they're doing conferences in Europe and all over the place. Kind of an interesting deal. So it opens up a whole nother path you could go down if you want to go down in professional management. You know, it really depends on your market though. Obviously, you know, certain places, you know, we did an episode with Tracy Strike out of Tulsa, and he owns like 5 or 6 short-term rentals that he manages himself. I mean, him and his team, they manage a bunch of these, one's for a big doctor. And you would think Tulsa, Oklahoma, right? What's there? But he makes a good point. A couple of them are right by the fairgrounds. And so if people are going for, you know, big giant, you know, fairs or horse shows or whatever they're doing there, they're staying there for a week or 10 days. So it goes back to the old location, 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 right? Even in the worst, you know, location in the world, which Tulsa's not, I think it's fine. It, you know, even in the weirdest place you could think of, there's got to be something that's, a you know, desirable there somewhere to make a potential good short-term rental.
Property Meld is made for maintenance work automation. Property Meld will work to schedule, remind, verify completion, and follow up with your residents automatically while providing the best-in-class communication system for your ease of use, your vendors, and your tenants. Begin reducing maintenance coordination time and increasing tenant satisfaction today. Learn more at PropertyMeld.com.
Now, one of the things you and I talked about on the pre-call stuff is casting a bigger net. And so I do think there's some merit in this if you're a long-term rental company and you want to expand your net out to offer short-term rentals as an option. A lot of these owners are coming to us potentially here in the San Antonio region or Austin and saying, I want to make my place a short-term rental. And okay, great. We'll talk you through that. You're going to need to furnish it. You're going to need to provide the knickknacks and you got to be doing this, that, and the insurance and the licensing and all that stuff. And at some point, they just throw up their hands and say, forget it. Just make it a long-term rental, okay? Because they're getting this idea off of these HGTV shows and these internet things. And they're like, I'm going to make millions running a short-term rental, you know? And then they realize the cost and the headache and the it's not an easy thing just to go out and do. It's, you know, in our market, it's 6-1, a half dozen the other. I mean, they're pretty much split as far as where you're going to make the revenue. In your market, I can see totally how that works. And so it boils down to location. I mean, location of that particular home, no matter the market it's in, I think it's more along the lines of the home. So what do you think of the casting the net concept I talked about as far as making a bigger net? Is that something you're seeing because you are doing it now?
Absolutely. It's not even just in the long-term rental side of things. Like you said, location, location is important. And I think that it comes about, it's knowing your audience. So whether or not you're trying to bring in new property management, you need to know where your visitors are coming from. And so your local chamber of commerces and things like that are very great resources. Statistics of, you know, what states are coming from, when and why they're here and what they're doing to visit. And it's really going to give you the edge on knowing what property is going to work best in a vacation rental market. But we find actually, you get those people that come in, they're just like, they think they're going to make so much money. I mean, these HGTVs, I mean, we see it all the time with these flip your house kind of shows. And it's just like, really, did you remodel that kitchen for 10 grand? I don't think so. Not with those pictures. It's really important to be able to know how to advise the client that's coming to you. And we find that a lot of them, they don't understand that there is downtime and you're still carrying expenses. And that's really important to understand that, you know, what your out-of-pocket costs are going to be. And so we get people that are, you know, they say, yeah, no, never mind. Let's just do unfurnished. But on the flip side of things, those vacation rentals that we do have, we actually get probably more of our sales clients come from people that are staying here and wanting to buy property.
That's what I was about to say. I think the sales opportunities for any particular market is great because people are, you know, they might be looking for a short-term rental and they want to buy it, or they're, when they're done with it, they're going to sell it. And so I think the sales opportunity, again, it's the bigger net. I do think, you know, a lot of long-term rental management companies, if they have the bandwidth, they should look to expand to the service to offer professional management services. It is different. It's a different game. It's a different animal, but I do think it's possible. And I think it should be done at a high level. I think that's something that everybody should look at. So I'm going to throw this at you. Are you ready? I'm going to let you think on it. I'm going to ask for a couple things. Actually, let's make it three things. I'm going to ask for a lessons learned. One lessons learned. So it would be a lesson, not plural, lesson learned. It would be, give me a horror story of like the funniest, weirdest, awful thing that you can think of in the game. And then give me like an awesome success story. You know, something that really made your day. So start with one of those. Hit me with a lesson learned in all of this.
Well, I mean, I would think that the biggest lesson learned would be the lawsuit that we faced. So, I mean, we just came out of that about 2 years ago. I think anything like that can scare the bejesus out of you and make you rethink a lot of the things that you're doing and how, so for example, the property management world, period. I mean, we know that when you walk through property, you don't say inspection, right? You walk through, because it holds you to a higher standard. And so it just goes to say when we were walking through properties, we were very careful when we were doing our depositions and everything to, you know, how we stated that we go through and our primary reason to be there is not checking safety. We are there to ensure that the property is secure. Windows are closed. They're locked. The doors are locked. The place is clean and ready for the next person. Also, a really another good reason why maybe you don't want to be involved in furnishing a property, because the way that that bed was placed was the biggest problem. And so, you know, it really came down to, unfortunately, this was a property that had been with us for about 25 years to determine who placed that bed there and to go back in time, you know, decades ago as to, you know, how and when that bed got there. Again, you know, window locks, things of that sort, it made us rethink how we were, you know, doing our walkthroughs and what we were noting and documenting and everything.
So sidetrack on that. Do you ever get blamed for missing furniture?
Yes. No, not missing furniture. Actually, we don't have too much furniture that disappears, but things get moved all the time. And it is amazing how some of your owner's expectations. So again, that's where I talk about you're meeting them up front and making them understand what is expected and what's going to happen. Because if not, it's going to be the biggest headache to you in the long run. I mean, we have owners that they get upset because a glass is placed in the wrong cabinet or, you know, hey, they moved this, you know, decorative item to the wrong table. I can't believe that the cleaners put the pillows on this couch. I mean, it's off the charts ridiculous.
I can just imagine. I mean, I like the concept of making the owners furnish the property just for that right there. Make them do the accountability and inventory, and it's done and over with. It's nothing that you have to really do, but I can see that as an additional service, but I also think there's going to be some liability there. And the first thing somebody would want to do is detail out every single thing that's in that property. So whether that's, you know, strong videos and strong lists of things that are in the property. Yeah, it's good stuff. Very good. So let's talk about, you know, give me one of the, maybe the funniest things that happened in short-term rental management. Can you think of a story to where you couldn't believe it? Maybe not funny, haha. Maybe it's funny, strange. You know, you're starting to giggle already, so I'm going to let you have it.
Oh, I got a long list of those. Actually, I joke around that I'm going to write a book one day because I think we have stories in our like regular property management world. The vacation world is just a step above. I have a gal that works and she runs that department for 5 years now. She came from the apartment industry. She managed over 100 buildings and she never did vacation rentals. And I just told her, she said it was a perfect analogy. I said, it's property management on steroids. Funniest stories. So we actually, I'll give you like one or two that actually kind of tie into one another. It's actually pretty funny. So we have this lady who is really insistent on us bringing batteries for the remote controls. And so we're questioning like, what, all the remote controls don't work. And she's like, I need batteries. Just please, I'm going to be gone for the day. Just drop them off. I need batteries. And we're like, well, if all the remote controls aren't working in the house, like we need to let us send our maintenance guy over there and just double check everything, make sure. Oh no, just drop off the batteries. And so maybe I shouldn't be talking about this online, but, we sent our maintenance guy anyways. We're like, no, we're going to send our in-house maintenance guy to go take a look and check him. And so when he went there, she had a gigantic, what do you want to say? A gigantic vibrator. And I think she wanted the batteries for that. And so, which kind of leads into another story that was pretty funny. One of probably my most embarrassing moments, I actually had this, this guy who started working for me and was really young. He's still with us today. And I think at this time he'd only been with us for about a year or two and he was in maybe 20, 21. And so, we had somebody call and say that they left a box and it wasn't an enclosed box. It was kind of like what you'd get at Costco where you're like putting stuff in. It was just a small box and, they left it, but they were really insistent. We want it back. We need it back. And it's, you know, please mail it. And so he goes down there and he comes back in my office and he looked at me and he said, please don't make me go to the post office with this. And I was like, why? And so I go over his desk in the box. I took one for the team on this one. I said, I'll go. And let me just tell you, everybody at the post office box down the street, they all know me. They've known me for years. And so walking into mailboxes, et cetera, with this, or the UPS store, I think it is now, with this box, and they all know me by name, was pretty embarrassing. But I had to bring a box that had a gallon size Ziploc bag with a vibrator, lube, which looked like it had exploded in the bag, by the way, it was really gross. A thing of pills, which I don't even know what it was. I didn't even look at it. And the most strange thing that accompanied it was a box of Depends. That was probably one of my more embarrassing moments. But they know me down there. I've since had to mail a dog's ashes even. This lady left her dog's ashes, which apparently I did not know. I won't put that store in jeopardy, but it's illegal to mail, but they know me so well. They're like, just package it, look the other way. Let it go. But yeah, it's an interesting industry for sure.
Do you think it's a moneymaker for most of these owners that you're working with?
Absolutely. Again, depends on the property for sure. It depends on your owner's mindset and their understanding that you are in a very competitive market. And so some people get, just like you do in the unfurnished property management world, people get hung up on, you know, $50, you know, and it's really important to make them understand that that $25 may cost you, you know, far more in the long run. You've got to have your pricing strategies down. You've got to follow the market data. And, you know, a lot of times people think that when they're getting closer to the season that you should be reducing prices because you want to bring the bookings in. And it's actually opposite. A lot of those pricing trends have changed. And, you know, the further out in advance you book, the bigger discount you get. And the closer you get, the prices actually go up.
Tell me about how many nights a month most of these rentals are being occupied.
Varies. It varies tremendously by the time of the year and the property itself. But let's say we have a prime property. I mean, the difference even between a 4-bedroom and a 2-bedroom, your 2-bedrooms and your 3-bedrooms seem to book well year round because you have, so in the off season, we have what we call the snowbirds that come and they try and get out of the cold. And so they tend to book more monthly. Well, they don't need a 4-bedroom house. And so those are a little bit harder to book in the off season. You're going to get more of the 3-dayers and the 4-dayers, people here trying to have weddings, things of that sort, versus a 2-bedroom or 3-bedroom that's going to stay booked year round because people like the extra bedrooms for family to come, but they don't want to pay the expense of a 4-bedroom. So your peak season, I mean, Labor Day or Memorial Day to Labor Day, especially the solid like 8-10 weeks in between the peak of summer, they're booked back to back. Just absolutely no openings whatsoever. But then you get into October and you got kind of, you know, 3-dayer here, a week there. And then in the winter months, at least in our market, December through the end of March, they tend to do a lot of monthly bookings. And so they stay booked solid. And then we get, you know, we're in a great area from the military people here testing equipment to GAI Institute. A lot of people here just for work. And then they, you know, so they come in and then they rent something out for 6 months and they take up that off season market time and just kind of fill in the bookings until they hit peak season.
Totally off the wall question here. So I was talking to Deb Newell and she owns a short-term rental property in Phoenix of all places, right? She lives in Minnesota, owns one in Phoenix. And they won't rent out that property to people who are from Phoenix, who live there. And I asked her why. She said, they're just there for a party. They don't want to, you know, get their home ready for a party. They want to rent a big house and have a 50-person party at my house. So they won't rent to anybody that actually lives there. I thought that was kind of a fascinating tidbit. Have you seen anything like that there where you are?
We actually have a lot of local people who rent, and not directly within our... part of the market that you're going to get, especially in the off season, you get people, we work with insurance adjusters and people who have floods in their homes and everything, they need temporary housing. So you're missing a part of the market. I wouldn't say that a lot of the people that, we don't get too many local people looking to rent. I mean, if they do, it's for a weekend, for a birthday, things of that sort. But we have strict no party policies and ability to basically kick their butts out if they don't adhere to the contract. So we have maximum occupancy, and even some of our properties are really strict on even their ability to have guests over. And so it's just, I think it's a matter of your contract. But we get a lot of people that live 10, 15, 20 minutes inland in like the Fallbrook area. And that's what they do. They spend their summer vacation at the beach, Temecula, and they're not very far away. They're very much local, but they want to come to the coast.
To clarify, so I don't get in trouble with Deb, it was more along the lines of be careful renting to, they don't, you know, versus we don't or will not or whatever. It was be careful. And I said, oh, that makes a lot of sense because you know, if you're, you want to throw a big party, go rent a house. And, you know, I get the strict policy of kicking them out, but by the time you catch it, it might be too late. So interesting.
Oh, stuff. No. Those neighbors will call.
Oh, yeah, I bet. That would be a whole nother episode, I bet, just dealing with the neighbors of some of these short-term rentals. But I have to imagine you get very few problems. I mean, just give me a couple minutes on that, do you think?
As far as parties and the problems that you
parties, can face? Neighbors. I mean, everybody says that, you know, the neighbors are going to complain. This has got to be a main objection to some owners. You know, I don't want the neighbors to complain about being a short-term rental. You got people coming and going, et cetera. Talk me through some of that. What do you think?
Well, we don't really find that it's an objection from a standpoint of the owner who's trying to do a vacation rental. Most of those people, they're just, you know, they're looking at their own pocketbook. So, I mean, but there are definitely owners out there that it doesn't keep them from doing vacation rentals, but it definitely they're mindful of their own, you know, their neighbors. And so that's why they're very strict on, you know, the policy of, you know, how many people, but some of the local cities have also put policies in place on how many people you can have in a unit, you know, per bedroom. It is definitely one when you're dealing with cities, trying to ban vacation rentals. It is one of the bigger things that happens is you have the neighbors come in and some of their top complaints are trash, trash that's been left out. They pull it out to the street. Maybe it's, you know, the manager or the owner who's managing it themselves doesn't come by for 2 or 3 days. So the trash cans have been sitting there. Parking is a big one. Those bad operators who are turning vacation rentals out for, you know, those big parties, having, weddings and things of that sort. We stay away from that. We have one property that will allow weddings, but we have a cap of how many people and how many times a year we actually do it, because we don't. At the end of the day, it's our name on that property. We have signs out front. And so we're kind of ruining our reputation. And we actually have one of the cities that has got a big issue. And a lot of the complaints are coming from one operator who does a lot of that. And so I feel that sometimes their parking complaint, that's the only thing that they can really determine would be an issue when people are having parties like that. Because other than that, when people are coming for vacation rentals, they really are coming, either they're flying in, and how many times do you ever rent more than one vehicle? Maybe two if you have a big 4-bedroom house. Other than that, they're driving from Arizona and inland, and they're all stacking themselves in an SUV and coming down in. And so they're not coming with 4 or 5 cars. So that particular property was actually, you know, an unfurnished property where somebody lived in, even a 2-bedroom, you're easily going to have 2 to 3 vehicles in that property. So the parking issue isn't really one, as long as you're not operating in the realm of having, you know, those parties and the, weddings and sort where people are, you know, coming in masses.
Got it. Good to hear. So I think you are one of the experts in this space by far. One of the best operators out there as far as short-term rentals mixed in with long-term rentals. Highly resourceful person. So I would, you know, if somebody wanted to reach out to you and get in touch with you to say, hey, you know, can you help me a little bit as far as getting my business going? And you know, how do they find you? How do they reach out to you?
Well, you can either contact me by phone, 760-525-9134 is my direct cell phone number, or you can actually go to my website at www.mclain, that is mclainproperties.com, and you can reach out through there.
Perfect. I really appreciate you coming on the show. It's been fantastic to learn more about the short-term rental space. Thanks again, and have a great day.
Thanks for having me.
Choose Seacoast Commerce Bank as your property management bank of choice. Seacoast Commerce Bank specializes in trust accounts and business banking for property managers. One of their best features is a cash analysis program where they can assist in paying your property management related invoices. Contact Allison at 619-988-6708 to learn more. And be sure to listen to the Property Management Mastermind Podcast, episode number 26, about Seacoast Commerce Bank.
Are you tired of chasing tenants to comply with having renter's insurance? Insurance Management Group can solve this problem with a master tenant's insurance policy. Keep tenants in compliance with your lease agreement and help protect all parties involved. A master tenant's insurance policy can also add an additional revenue stream to your business. Contact Derek Scott at 918-728-8992 or visit imgadvisors.com. To learn more, listen to the Property Management Mastermind Show podcast, episode number 36.
This has been a podcast episode by PropertyManagementProductions.com. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast, leave us feedback, and come back for our next episode.